FM.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. He is in Great Britain commenting on Ukraine crisis, an article in Time magazine. He has three compromise proposals. The second is about conventional forces in Europe. And implicit here is the Russian demand of a rollback of military infrastructure. That was the language. By NATO back to 1997. What would a compromise look like in this particular conflict?
Well, once again, I mean, any compromise has to be reciprocal and mutual. In other words, obviously, NATO cannot simply accept a Russian demand that we roll back our military forces. Russia has to make commitments as well. Now, at the most basic, of course, we remove certain forces from Russia's borders, and Russia obviously has to remove and stand down those forces that it has concentrated on the borders of Ukraine to remove the military threat to Ukraine. I mean, going further, the Conventional Forces in Europe Agreement, or the adapted version of the late 1990s, provided for limits on NATO military deployment to the new states of Eastern Europe, which was promised by NATO, and of course also tied Russia into limiting its forces on the borders of NATO. NATO essentially walked away from this because it was insisting that Russia withdraw Russian forces from various places that inherited from the Soviet Union, by the way. This was not initially Russia's decision. Russian troops were, in Moscow's view, protecting the Transnistria breakaway bit of Moldova, the breakaway republics of Georgia, and of course now Crimea annexed to Russia. But, I mean, if we accept that limited Russian forces are bound to remain there, we can still reach an agreement which would remove the immediate threat to Ukraine, and also would lead to the withdrawal and a block on the stationing of new Russian forces that would threaten NATO and Europe, especially missile forces. So there ought to be plenty of room there for a compromise agreement. But once again, this would not be simply a surrender to Russian conditions. This would also set conditions on Russia, on Russian military deployments.
I puzzled about the opinion of the 74,000 U.S. military personnel in Europe spread over many states. However, we come to the third recommendation, and this strikes me as the most difficult to achieve, but it sounds wise, a demilitarized Donbass within Ukraine, back to the Minsk II agreements that has a lot of missing paragraphs. Is that a conversation that can be determined in a quick time, or is that something that will take years to negotiate, demilitarized zone?
Well, it could be negotiated in quick time, you know, if we had the will to do so. Indeed, the Normandy format and the meetings now taking place in Paris between the signatories of that agreement, France, Germany, Ukraine, and Russia, are intended to move that forward. But they are involving only low-level officials. And above all, although not just those signatories, but the United States as well and the EU have endorsed these agreements. As you say, there are important elements missing, but those important elements could be filled in with some ease, in my view, if we could get to the absolutely critical initial point, which is that the Ukrainian government and parliament have to guarantee permanent, extensive autonomy for the Donbass within Ukraine. Now, this they have repeatedly refused to do. Of course, this autonomy would not kick in until the Donbass had been demilitarized and Russian troops had been withdrawn. But without a cast iron Ukrainian promise of autonomy to the Donbass, there cannot be an agreement. Now, the problem is although we reached this agreement, we have done nothing to put pressure on the Ukrainians actually to come up with this offer. Until they do so, there cannot be an agreement. So the ball there is, I think, very much in our court. Now, people say, oh, but Russia would not, then honour its agreement to demilitarise. Well, we can't know that until, you know, we and the Ukrainians have taken the initial step. Of course, if the Russians refuse to demilitarize, then the Minsk process is dead. But we have to take the first step.
Anatole, just a minute here. There appears to be an escalatory cycle underway. And that is always a moment for an accident, something to be misunderstood. You first, when you rejoined me this last year at CBS, you said this is the most dangerous conflict on planet Earth. Do you continue to believe that this is dangerous for everyone in Europe and around the world? We have 30 seconds.
Well, I'd say it's one of the two. Taiwan is also extremely dangerous. But certainly, even if U.S. troops are not deployed to Ukraine, the closer they get to Russia's borders, yep, the more chance of an accident. And when the first American soldiers die, and this may not be intentional on the part of Russia, planes bump into each other, then we are at a wholly new level of danger, which I pray that we will avoid.
Anatole Lieven, the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.